हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्थु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Joy. So now we've had Arjuna's kidnapped Subhadra, then the Yadavas meet in their war council, all very much disturbed. Then Krishna convinces them that no, he's also, you know, naturally a relative and this and that, and it's very good for the families. And so then with, you know, they happily then they invite him back, and then the two are married. And after, you know, some time being spent and that, then Arjuna asked to, you know, the year is up. He wants to go back, see his brothers, and introduce them to Subhadra. And so that then brings us to chapter 14, the burning of the Kandava forest. The Yadavas bestowed vast amounts of wealth on Arjuna, and he left Dwarka accompanied by a long train of chariots and elephants, as well as hundreds of thousands of cows decorated with silk and gold. Right? Because the Kshatriyas themselves may have big goshalas, and they may need more cows, but in any case, even if they receive cows, they'll take care of them, any of the extra cows and that, then they'll be giving in charity. So the Kshatriyas will keep like that hundreds of thousands of cows so they can give in charity regularly to the Brahmins. Subhadra rode with him on a fine golden chariot drawn by tall white steeds. They soon arrived at Indraprastha, and Arjuna went straight to Yudhishthira. He clasped his feet and then worshipped him according to the Vedic injunctions. Arjuna then worshipped Domya and the other rishis in the royal court. When the ceremonies were complete, his other brothers embraced him with tears in their eyes and asked him to relate to them all his adventures. Right? So, you know, the formalities of his coming there and his respecting his brothers and the seniors there, the Brahmins and the ministers. Then after that, now that being done, the formality, now they could get together as brothers and interact and all. After Spence, so, you know, they want to know all the different stories, because if it's Arjuna, there's going to be something special. It's not going to be, well, you know, I went out and we walked down the Ganges, and, you know, when we got to the Sagar, then we walked around there, went to Kanyakumari, then we came up like that, and then we came up to here, and yeah, that's it, you know, offered obeisances, took bath, did some yajnas, gave a little charity to the Brahmins, and yeah, that's it. You know, that's not going to happen to Arjuna, right? After spending time with his brothers, Arjuna went to see Draupadi. As the emperor entered her chamber, she turned away from him and said, "Arjuna, what brings you here?" Right? He's been away for a year. "You should go and be with your new bride." Right? You could see she's immediately upset. You know, "That daughter of the Sattva of her race must be missing you." Right? He's been away for a year, but she's not saying she's missing him. But he's just married Subhadra, and that he left, you know, her chambers to come over and visit her. Oh, she must be missing you, right? So, in other words, she's telling him to, you know, leave. Draupadi sat with her back to Krishna. He was her favorite among the Pandavas, and she feared he might come to prefer Subhadra, right? So, among the five brothers, she, you know, the favorite was Arjuna, because it means Arjuna is Arjuna, of course, so there's going to be that aspect. But it's also Arjuna, he's the one that performed in the Swayamvar ceremony. So he's the one who she first thought was she was going to be marrying. And so naturally he'll have a special place in her heart. So technically, though, we'll see at the end of the Mahabharata, you know, it will be seen by Yudhishthira as a religious fault. But, you know, nobody cares because they know who Arjuna is. And she's also worried that, you know, unless she says that, no, you're still, because she being the first queen, anyone else they marry, they all have to be in after that. Because when the king, if he has many wives, that the first queen is the prominent queen. Then there could be seven other main queens. After that, then they're all like secondary queens. But still among the main queens, the primary queen is the most prominent. Like in Dwarka, Rukmini will be the most prominent. Then it'll be the other seven, you know, Satyabhama and Jambavati and all of them. Then after that it'll be Rohini and the 16,100. So she's worried that, you know, she may become more prominent, right? Because she's, you know, Dwarka, she's Krishna's sister, everything. The Pandava repeatedly begged her forgiveness and assured her that his love for her was in no way diminished. Draupadi spoke in a strained voice. A second tie always relaxes the first one, no matter how strong it may have been. You know, in other words, she's really upset. Otherwise, just that he's making that endeavor and trying to please her and all that, then, you know, naturally, then it should come around. But here's something that it's not just something happened and then it moves on. Subhadra is a permanent fixture in the household, so it's not that she's going away. It's not that, okay, something stupid happened, and now it's going. No, she's a permanent fixture. And so that now she's always saying, no, but because it's only focuses on her, but now with Subhadra, that means focus will be there. But of course, it'll be worked out that whenever she's with any of the other brothers, then he'd be with Subhadra. You know, so in other words, when it's his time with Draupadi, he'll just be with Draupadi. Arjuna tried to console the beautiful Draupadi, but she remained silent, always looking away from him, so she wouldn't even make eye contact. Right, and this is after so long he's coming, he's hoping going to be, and then you discuss these things, but no, the ladies, this is the prominent thing, this is what's happening. Seeing that he could not win her over, he left her chamber and went to Subhadra. He asked her to dress herself as a cowherd girl. He wanted to remind Draupadi of that Subhadra was the sister of Krishna, Draupadi's beloved lord. Krishna had begun his life as a cowherd boy in a small village. By having Subhadra appear as a cowherd girl, Arjuna hoped that Draupadi's natural affection for Krishna would be awakened and directed towards his sister. The Yadu princess was brought into Draupadi's chambers, attired in simple red silk. The servant girls who showed her in said, "This maiden has asked if she could become your servant." Subhadra immediately bowed before Draupadi and said, "I am here to do your bidding." Draupadi had never seen Subhadra and did not realize who she was, because she didn't. By seeing, she wouldn't know who she is. But seeing her humble demure and being reminded of Krishna by Subhadra's rustic dress, Draupadi's heart melted. She raised her hands and blessed her, saying, "May you become the wife of a hero and the mother of a hero. May you be without rival." Yeah, so it reminds her of Krishna, so then she's very, you know, it's not just she reminds her of Krishna. That's going to be the prominent element. But because her attitude is so nice and humble, she comes very sincerely, you know, she's come to serve and all that. So she has that mood to serve, so then there's no problem there. And she reminds her of Krishna, so she's very kind to her. Subhadra replied, "May it be so." She then introduced herself. "I am Subhadra, Krishna's sister." So she's heard about Subhadra, but now she comes in, she reminds her of Krishna, because before she's just thinking, you know, she's another, you know, another wife, so she's a rival wife. And so then there'll be so much tension there and all that. Now that she's taken that mood of service and that, she'll maintain that. It's not that she's not just saying that just to say it as a political trick. You know, and anyway, the consecutive wives after that, they'll always be submissive to anybody who's there before. You know, it's just the etiquette. Otherwise, it doesn't work. There's a pecking order. And if that pecking order's in place, the women can work together. But if any time they try to, you know, vie for the position, then that's where the fight starts. Draupadi smiled and embraced her co-wife. Her jealousy and anger were dissipated by Subhadra's gentleness. She asked Subhadra to tell her everything about Dwarka and Krishna. So now she has someone that she can talk to about Krishna, Because, I mean, here's Krishna's sister. How many stories will Krishna's sister have to tell? Right? So that, you know, you could keep busy forever. They spoke together for hours. Then Draupadi took Subhadra by the hand and led her to meet Kunti. The two Pandava queens soon became close friends and would spend much time together discussing the activities of Krishna and his associates. So they would just sit around and talk about Krishna. You know, so that's perfect. Right. Yeah. A few days, so we see here as he went to Draupadi and then he introduced, because otherwise, why, if Arjuna introduces her to Kunti, then how does Draupadi fit into this? So now, with Draupadi being pleased, Draupadi takes her to meet Kunti. So now it becomes, you know, perfect. There's no rivalry. A few days after Arjuna's return, Krishna and Balaram came to Indraprastha. Right, so they came back and everything, meeting, then Krishna and Balaram came. Right, and it's also, one is they could come back, because if they came immediately, then all the focus would be on Krishna and Balaram, and it wouldn't be on Arjuna for coming back and have been out for so long and all that. So it's natural, let them get together, all these things, plus you have to work out this thing with Draupadi and Subhadra. You know, everyone has to get together, settle in, and everybody be comfortable. Then if Krishna and Balaram come, then now they're a guest, the focus can be on them, and everything will go very nicely. Accompanied by his sons and ministers, and riding at the head of a great army, Krishna entered the Pandava city, where Nakula and Sahadev greeted him at the gates. Right, because they generally do, that's their service. They always do the greeting and that. We'll see, like the Rajasuya, they'll do the same thing. As they proceeded in state down the main highway, thousands of citizens stood along the roadside. So in state means that, you know, very formal and opulent and all respect and dignity. As they proceeded in state down the main highway, thousands of citizens stood along the roadside. They cheered and worshipped Krishna and his elder brother as they moved slowly towards Yudhishthira's palace. The Yadus gazed around them at the city. The roads were immaculately swept and sprinkled with perfumed water. So basically, cleanliness is such an important thing. So Krishna and Balaram are so, you know, pleased with this, is that because it's service to keep everything nice and clean. Sometimes we think, oh, there's more important services, but if things aren't clean, then what's the point? You're doing occupation so that you'll have a life, and that life, then if it's in a dirty place, you know, what's the meaning? And if your service is also done in a dirty place, then what's going to be the level of consciousness? So the idea is everything's supposed to be very, very clean and tidy. So then that creates a very nice septic atmosphere. Fences draped with bright garlands ran down the sides of the wide avenues. On the tops of tall white mansions flew countless flags and standards. Right, flags will just be flags, but standards will be actually some family or some other kind of aspect like that. It'll show some kind of specific. The sweet scent of burning aloes filled the air, and the sound of musical instruments could be heard. Right, so you're just going down the roads, and you can smell the aloe vera. I mean, the aloe meaning the aguru and those kind of aspects like that. So that means there's so much in the houses that it comes out onto the street. It also means, like it shows here, the streets are immaculate, so there's no fragrance. So you actually smell, you know, like that, because there's nothing else to block and cancel the smell. So everything's perfectly clean. Therefore, a little bit of fragrance, it'll go out and everyone can smell. Krishna and Balaram entered the Pandava's palace and went before Yudhishthira and his brothers. Yudhishthira worshipped Balaram with all due ceremony, embraced Krishna with affection. Because Krishna is junior, Balaram senior. Krishna offered his respects and worships to Yudhishthira and Bhima, then took a seat in the assembly hall. Many important personalities from Dwarka also took their places in the hall, including Akrura, Uddhava, Satyaki, Kritavarma, Sharana, and Krishna's sons Prajumna, Samba, and Aniruddha. Krishna then gave Arjuna all the bridal gifts for Subhadra that her relatives in Dwarka had sent. Right, so they had given many things to him, and then there's also gifts for Subhadra at that time. So he brought. He gave heaps of gold bricks and precious gems to Yudhishthira. You know, as you mentioned before, gold bricks, it means actual bricks. because you just keep the raw gold. Then you can give it in charity. You can use it for ornaments. You can use it for making, things for the deities, or paraphernalia for the yajnas and puja. Because we see in Dwapara Yuga, deity worship means you offered the boga offering on solid gold plates. You know, so a first class plate will be said to be 36 inches. Right? So that's two hands wide, so it'll be that wide. So 36 inches. You know, next best is 24 inches. The next best will be 18 inches, like that. So whatever it is, they would be gold. So kings would be the 3 foot, right? 36 inch. And then you offer that, but then they won't use that one again. It'll either be given in charity or remade or, you know, like that. So it's just such a standard that they would be using. So gold bricks, you know, is something for them they could easily use like that. Krishna also presented the king with 1,000 chariots adorned with rows of golden bells. Each of them yoked to 4 steeds driven by well-trained charioteers. 10,000 milk-bearing cows, 1,000 moon-like white horses with golden harnesses, and 1,000 white mules with black manes, which could run at the speed of the wind. Right, so mules are very good at running like that, just very fast for a long time. Horses, then they do so many things. Mules don't have that kind of training that they can do so many different ways of walking and jumping and this and that. Mules, their thing is they can run. They can go really fast. And especially here, then we see these were very special white mules. You generally don't see white mules. They're always kind of a brownish gray. And then with black manes. So these are very special mules. Because you need them if something needs to get done very quickly, a messenger has to get someplace very fast with a message, or, you know, someone has to go in a chariot very fast to someplace, or, you know, things like that. So the mules are very useful in that way. As well as this, Balaram gave Arjuna as a wedding gift 1,000 elephants, each resembling a hill, and decked with golden ornaments and bells, right? So very big. Innumerable other items were offered to the Pandavas, being brought before them by Krishna's servants. Placed outside the hall, the wealth given by the Yadavs looked like a sea stretching in all directions. So it wasn't just a little bit of something here, but in the halls are huge. It's just like it just goes the whole hall. There's so much stuff. Yeah. So, you know, we see that there they gave stuff to Arjuna just in general. Now in Dwarka, now they come, and now Krishna is giving things to Yudhishthir and also to Arjuna. And then there are also all the different relatives and everybody else, well-wishers, are sending things for Subhadra. Yudhishthir graciously accepted the gifts and then arranged for all the Yadavas to be accommodated in his palace. They and the Pandavas passed many days together in happiness, and when it came time for them to leave, the Pandavas, in turn, presented them with brilliant gems as gifts. With Balaram at their head, the Yadavs headed back to Dwarka. But Krishna decided to remain behind to spend some time alone with Arjuna. Right? Because he didn't really... Pandava was there in Dwarka for 4 months. But Krishna couldn't really spend any time with him because he's supposed to not know who he is. And then they come and there's the marriage. They're there for some days. Then they left on that. And so then Krishna wants to spend some time with his friend. One day Arjuna suggested, "Krishna, the days are hot. Let us go for some time to the banks of the Jamuna," right? Because the breeze is blowing across the water. It was very cooling. "We have constructed many fine pleasure houses there." So down next to the Jamuna, so that means that their position in that Indraprastha, Khandavaprastha, then it must be bordering the Jamuna, like that. Krishna agreed to the proposal and they set off. They soon arrived at a charming spot amid groves of tall trees. High white mansions stood along the riverbeds, looking like a city of the gods. So it's not just one or two little places. It's big, big places, because if they want to spend time there, then the whole family can go with everybody and all their friends and servants, and then very nicely spend time. Krishna and Arjuna entered one of the houses. where they were served varieties of exquisitely flavored food and drinks, right? Because if they're going to go, the servants are there. They're already, all these things are maintained nicely. They lay down upon golden couches spread with silk covers. After relaxing for some time, they decided to go for a walk in the woods. The two heroes wandered along the riverbank, discussing martial arts and past battles they had each fought. You know, that who was that, what they fought, what techniques they used, what the other one used, how they countered. You know, anything like this, these are inspiring elements for the Kshatriyas. Having walked for a distance, they sat down upon an ivory bench that had been placed near the edge of a dense forest. As they continued to talk, a Brahmin immediately emerged from the woods. They looked at him in surprise. Because they're out in the forest, there's nothing out there. Because suddenly this Brahmin comes out of the forest. He resembled an old sal tree, so it's quite tall, with a complexion like molten gold. His beard and hair were bright yellow, and he shone like the morning sun. His two eyes were like lotus leaves, and his body was well formed and powerful. As the Brahmin approached them, blazing like fire, Krishna and Arjuna stood up and awaited his order, right? Because they're sitting there, a Brahmin's walking towards them. That means there must be something, that the Brahmin wants to discuss or say or get done or like that. So then they stand up there waiting. Okay, what does the Brahmin want? In a resonant voice, the Brahmin said, "I know you two to be the foremost of all men. I myself am a voracious Brahmin who eats much." So he says, they're foremost, they're powerful. And I, as a Brahmin, I'm also, I eat powerfully, Bhima, he's known as a voracious eater. "I have therefore approached you in order to beg my food and to be gratified by you." All right, so he's saying, you are great persons, and I eat a great amount. So I've approached you because the two of you can arrange for it. Only great persons could arrange what he wants to eat. Both Krishna and Arjuna folded their palms and asked the Brahmin what food he would like. The Brahmin replied, "I do not eat ordinary food. Know me to be Agni, the fire god. Give me food that suits me." Right? So then fire god eats, things like wood and stuff. "Please help me devour this Khandava forest." He indicated the jungle by which they were standing, right? So that, because Khandava Prastha, then the Khandava forest is there. And so, they had developed a particular area, but some of it would still be just all forest, all jungle. Although he made many attempts to consume this forest, Indra had repeatedly thwarted his efforts. So he tries to burn this forest, but Arjuna stops him from burning the forest. Indra stops him from burning the forest. So he was unable to. This was because Indra's friend, the Naga Takshaka, lived in the forest. So Takshaka had a place there and he was happy there, so Indra kept protecting him. Whenever Agni blazed up and began to cover the forest, Indra would send torrents of rain to stop him. The fire god continued, "Both of you are experts in arms. By your prowess, you'll be able to prevent Indra from stopping me. Thus I shall consume this great forest. O heroes, this is the food I desire to have from you." So now it'll be explained why this forest. Krishna and Arjuna looked at each other in surprise. They assured Agni that they would do everything in their power to help him, but they were curious as to why he wanted to consume this particular forest. Right, not some other forest. It means there's so many forests. The god explained that the Khandava forest contained numerous varieties of medicinal herbs. He needed the herbs because he was suffering a malady due to having eaten excessive amounts of ghee, right? Because as the fire god, everybody doing yajna will offer ghee to him. So he has to digest all that ghee. So many yajnas are being done, then he's become a little bit sick. There had been a great sacrifice performed by a king named Swetaki, in which so much ghee was offered in the fire that Agni became ill. Brahma then told him that he could be cured if he ate the herbs in the Khandava forest. So Brahma is dictated. So there's some reason. One is that it has the herbs and everything and all that. But besides that, there must be some other considerations there. When Agni failed in his attempts to consume the forest, Brahma told him that he would succeed if he could gain the assistance of Krishna and Arjuna. Brahma had said, in a previous incarnation, these two men were in fact the ancient infallible deities Nara and Narayan. They have appeared on the earth to accomplish the celestial's purpose, therefore ask for their help. Because whenever the demigods would have big problems in battles and that, Nara and Narayan Rishi would come, and then they would defeat the enemies, just the two of them. Right? The whole host of demigods couldn't, but the two of them could. So that's why he's saying, you can't get this done, then you approach these. Arjuna concluded, I now depend upon you too. I must eat this forest. Brahma has informed me that the living beings within the forest are sinful and should be destroyed. Therefore, do not harbor any doubts. This act is sanctioned by authority. So he's going to be benefited by the herbs and all that that are there in the forest. At the same time, a lot of sinful living entities are somehow or another living in that forest. And so then you'll get two things done at once. So, Agni will be cured, and all these very sinful people will be, and living entities, you know, all the different demons. Sometimes it's mentioned in the beginning of the Mahabharata that because the demons, the demigods are so powerful, the demons couldn't get any position, so they started taking birth in even the animal species and different things just so they could be, you know, like if you're the head elephant, you're the head of a tribe, you're a big guy, because they couldn't do that in human form, so they came in the animal form. So it must be full of all these varieties of demons that have taken birth. Okay. So that is here. So then next we'll hear about how, you know, then Arjuna's requests and then the actual, you know, burning of the forest. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.